Monday night on the Fan pregame, gang's all back together here. We got the Stanley Cup final matchup officially set. Canada's team, the Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers. We're going to have all week long to set it up because it doesn't start till Saturday. We're going to have Merrick Monday in a few minutes.
Officially calling it Canada's team. Okay, we'll get to that.
I said it.
A bit. It's probably pretty cool to be in Edmonton last night, whether you think it's Canada's team or not. So we'll tap in someone who was in Edmonton last night. Rob Brown, Oilers analyst for CHED, former NHLer. Of course, he'll pop on in about a half hour to discuss everything that was last night.
Jays are kicking off a four-game homestand against the Orioles tonight at 7 o'clock on Sportsnet. Gausman on the mound. We're going to tee all that up in a little bit.
And the Caitlin Clark discourse is discoursing, so we'll touch on that in a bit. Best bets, including Conn Smythe Cup handoffs. We're getting real nerdy with it. And the latest on Mitch Marner from 32 Thoughts, and more specifically, Elliot Friedman.
Okay, it's been a long time coming, but we finally have the official Stanley Cup final matchup. The Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers starting on Saturday, so you get all week to build the hype, to build the narratives, to go through every single part of it. But let's just look back a little bit at last night, watching the Edmonton Oilers do it on home ice, first time in a very long time. We already know how long it's been since a Canadian team was in or was hoisting a Stanley Cup, but it's been a long time for Edmonton fans, and I guess just Canadian hockey fans in general, to see this moment. And I felt really excited to see the Stars have the moment to star, not the Dallas Stars, the Edmonton Oilers Stars. And I just think it's going to be an awesome Stanley Cup final. Oilers having the narratives that they have with the Stars needing to get a cup and the way that their season started. And then the Panthers, who were there last year, and they're kind of a team that's been under-respected, underappreciated, that gets a back-to-back Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, with Edmonton specifically, I can kind of understand why people would be like somewhat skeptical and not really sure if they want this to happen, because, of course, the heartbreak is 31 years in the making, and everyone's kind of jealous about the other successes that Canadian markets have if you're not in that Canadian market. But I'm watching last night, and I'm more specifically consuming the McDavid interview with Kyle Bukauskas after, and it's fully bearded McDavid and clean-shaven Bukauskas. And McDavid looks like someone who's gone through it, right? And who's gone through 9 years of not yet getting what he wants and 9 years of people questioning whether or not the Oilers will ever get it done. And you see him happy, finally, smiles kind of coming out, but still reserved, and lauding his teammates, the background noise, everything that goes into championship moments are things that I am always able to romanticize about. And when it is involving the best player in the world, someone that means the most to the game of hockey than anyone else on the planet right now, I found myself saying, you know, how could I not get behind this? How could I not get behind Connor McDavid having his moment? That was part of the moment last night. But the moment that is truly, truly the thing that will make him and Oilers fans happy, and hockey historians, you know, take away any asterisks that might be beside his name one day, that's still to come. But yeah, watching McDavid in that moment, it's like, if you're a hockey fan, how could you not, part of you, not get behind that?
Yeah, this is the thing that you want all the greats, the greatest of all times, the Mount Rushmore. You want them to have that cup or that ring or that multiple versions
that
of
validation.
That. And this is the closest that he's gotten, and he has this opportunity. And when he scored that goal last night, opens up the first period with an absolute beauty, you just think, that's the best player in the world. He's going to be on the biggest stage now in the world, playing for the Stanley Cup. It feels like it's time to let everyone else in on the secret that hasn't maybe always followed Connor McDavid. Like, let's say you're not a Canadian and, you know, you don't tune into NHL as much, you're going to probably watch the Stanley Cup final. But you're going to see Connor McDavid hopefully do stuff like that every single night and put himself in a different stratosphere. And then when you're teeing up how this Oilers team got here, it was a rocky, rocky road, right? It starts to feel like, well, wouldn't that be the perfect storybook? You know, they were 2-9-1 to start. Woodcroft gets fired in November. I know that a lot of people put Edmonton Oilers, this entire company basically, like, put the Edmonton Oilers to win the cup. But those were like freezing cold takes exposed already in November. And you thought, what is this team? Would McDavid ever want out? Would Draisaitl not re-sign? Like, we were already having those conversations, you know, tear this thing down. And then they went on that incredible run and they believed in each other. And they get Chris Knobloch, who doesn't have NHL coaching experience. And you just watch this inevitability or this belief in themselves. And that's what I really want to hear when we talk about this all week long from those that are closest to the Oilers. Like, how did a team go from having all the expectations in the world to having the second or worst start ever in this NHL like era for them to come back to be in a Stanley Cup final. Like that is, that's a incredible story. So you just want to almost see them get it done, right?
I love when conversations change with permanence, right? And these 9 years could be looked back so differently if McDavid and the Oilers get it done. It's like, hey, that's one of the great 9 years in the history of this game. Or it could be, is Connor McDavid ever going to win a cup? That's what's on the line here. And when you have something that important on the line, it makes for a better Stanley Cup final, at least for me.
We have something important on the line. It's Jeff Merrick of Merrick Mondays. Jeff, thanks for jumping on. How's it going?
It's going well. Just hearing you guys talk, does it... I'm just thinking about your conversation here and hearing how we're talking about McDavid and seeing McDavid win the cup. Does it feel like this is his only shot at it?
Oh, I hope not.
I don't think so. Do you feel that way?
Hang on. Like, this is really hard to win. Like, this is really, really tough to win. Jack Eichel won it last year, and that might be his only shot to get there. I mean, the hockey history is littered with people who thought they were going to get there multiple times and win Stanley Cup. I can recall in 2010, I was working at Hockey Night in Canada, and that was the rise of the Chicago Blackhawks and Taves and Kane and Keith and Seabrook, et cetera, Chalmerson, Hossa, all of it. And so I remember going back during that year when it's obvious that Chicago was going to do something major here. So I'm back to 1961, the last time previous to 2010, when the Hawks won the Stanley Cup, the Eddie Litzenberger team. And it was incredible reading quotes from Bobby Hull. Because after they won the cup, like, he's talking like they're going to win, like, multiple Stanley Cups, 4, 5, 6, you know, right into the Hockey Hall of Fame. They never won another cup until 2010. Like, I don't know. I'm not sure how I sort of feel about this one, but I don't know. Does part of you guys feel like this might be Connor's only shot at it? Because who knows what's going to happen to the Oilers?
Yeah,
I know. Like, we don't even know what's going to happen. Like, who knows? Ken Holland's on an expiring deal. Like, right away, there might be a change there. We have expiring contracts and Dreisaitl, and a year out of that, you have Connor McDavid. I don't know. It's just it's for the first time I've really thought about it, just hearing you two guys talk.
Yeah, I mean, I think next year they're going to have a good chance. Obviously, it gets a little bit difficult. You know, got Connor Brown, and you know, Dreisaitl's obviously coming up. But I'll throw it back to the Florida side. Maybe it's their last chance, right? Like, you win the President's Trophy, then Stanley Cup Final, Stanley Cup Final. If you don't get it done within that 3-year span, can you get it done? And maybe their cap sheet is a little bit more friendly or amenable than the Oilers is. But I do still think you're going to have Connor and Leon and Nuge and Hyman and Evan Bouchard, maybe more specifically, in that power play that can get it done versus basically anyone. I don't think this is the last chance, but I will say, Merrick, I really hope the Oilers attack this like it's their only chance.
Yeah, no, I get that. My only question is, you know, you look at the last 12 to 18 months, the West got really good. Like, the West, and then now here's the emergence of the Vancouver Canucks. Like, the Western Conference just kind of got awesome. Like, maybe you can make the case, like, if we're comparing these two teams and who has a better shot at getting back there after the season, you probably say the Florida Panthers. Because, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the Eastern Conference isn't as competitive as the West. Like what was an upset? What would have been considered an upset in the Western Conference in the opening round? Like, there's killers. Like, Colorado's a killer. Vegas is a killer. All of a sudden, Vancouver has emerged as a killer. Dallas is a killer. We looked at what happened to Winnipeg Jets. They're not going to go away. Maybe it's part, we don't know what's going to happen to the Oilers. But part of it, too, is, like, the West is really good, man. Like, the West is awesome. And there are some really, really juggernaut teams. And now, you know, you're going to stick, you know, Macklin Celebrini into the Western Conference at the end of this month, too.
That's true.
I don't know. It's an interesting little thought exercise.
Not yet on the San Jose Sharks.
What's that?
Not yet on the San Jose Sharks, I don't think.
No, I know. Like, listen, I think Mike Greer's got, like, one of the biggest, most interesting jobs in the offseason. Like, back when Celebrini falls into his lap, Will Smith comes out of college, and all of a sudden your responsibility now is not just to surround one franchise player with wingers, but two. You want to talk about a tall order? It's one thing to say, hey, we've got these two great stud centers we're going to have for the next 10 years. Yeah, what do you surround them with? That's going to be a really interesting
shot. Maybe Joe Pavelski decides to go home for 1 year.
Not if you hear them talk yesterday, yeah, right, Ailish? Like, I know, like, there might be two players from the 2003 draft, you know, one of the best drafts of all time, Joe Pavelski calling it a career. And I think we wonder, too, if Suter's going to get bought out as well. And maybe that's, you know, it takes another one off the board here, but we'll see.
All right, we got lots of offseason to talk San Jose Sharks. Let's ask you about this matchup between...
Here we are. The Oilers making it to the Cup. What does America want to talk about?
This is San Jose Sharks Talk Plus today. 32 thoughts on the Sharks. Okay, so we've got the Panthers, and we got the Oilers going head-to-head. One is the best offensive team, and one is the best defensive team. I think it's a very interesting matchup on how these two will play each other. We've got a whole week to set the stage for it. But you just blankly day one here, start to unravel what's going to be a great matchup. Like, where do you give the edge? Because there's one team that just has this big emotional burst getting into the final for the first time in a really long time, and another team that was here last year that has higher expectations for themselves and are great offensively and defensively. So it's very interesting.
Love the Edmonton story. How do you not love anything that Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Zach Hyman, et cetera, are a part of, and Alex Webb and Bouchard into that mix. However, the one thing that I really love about the Florida Panthers is, you know, one of the things that I loved about that Islanders team that ripped off four Stanley Cups in a row, and it's one of the things that I love about, you know, the 2011 Boston Bruins, which, again, I will most closely compare the Florida Panthers to, and that is they have an ability to play any way you want. Like, isn't that one of the true testaments to how great a team is? That they can't just play one way. Now, bracket that for a second, because the Oilers are getting there too. Like, we've seen the Oilers change the way that they play, and that's what makes this matchup so fascinating. This isn't just style versus style. This is adapt versus adaptability. But as far as the Florida Panthers go, like, they're comfortable playing any style. Like, you want to play a wide open game, they got guys that can do that. You want to play a snug 2-1 game, that's fine. You want to play a dirty game that takes 3.5 hours to play, they're fine with that. You want to play just a soft skill game, well, they've got guys to do that too. And that's one of the reasons why I'll give the slight edge in this one to the Florida Panthers, plus the experience factor. They have been there before. None of this is a novelty. You know, they all got, you know, banged up, and, you know, Matthew Tkachuk broke his sternum last year in the playoffs. Ouch. And they're healthy. Again, they have another long rest, which really benefits a physical team like the Florida Panthers. Like, this is going to be a fascinating one. And again, I'll come back to the best thing we saw from the Oilers this year was, I mean, getting into the playoffs after they were in, like, last place, and we are wondering about lottery picks for the Oilers and players requesting trades. The best thing that we saw from the Edmonton Oilers was the coaching change and how they adapted and how they were able to make a commitment to at the same time, seemingly not sacrifice offense, because you look at the leaderboard, there's still McDavid, there's still Draisaitl, and Hyman's got 14 goals, and now Evan Bouchard has entered the chat. It's a fascinating thing that's happening here with the Oilers.
Yeah, you laid out some advantages there for Florida, and I think the biggest one might be, hey, what condition do hockey games start in? Well, it's 5-on-5, and right now we're seeing the 5-on-5. Maybe it's best offense versus best evens. Maybe it's best at even strength versus best on special teams, because that's what Florida's been at 5-on-5. They've been the most dominant team in these playoffs, and the Oilers have been able to really, really do damage with their specialty team. So is it as simple as this for Florida? Hey, if we stay out of the box, we're winning this series. Like, they can they look at it as simple as that?
I think that's part of it. The problem is, I'll just be honest, that's going to be hard. Like, that's going to be hard with Matthew Tkachuk and Sam Bennett specifically. Two ex-Calgary Flames who went to war with Edmonton for however many years, and specifically Evander Kane. Like, when you're playing in Edmonton, specifically against the Oilers, like, how do you put a leash on those puppies? Like, really, like, I know you got to be a pro and focus on the bigger picture, but is it like there's a sidebar of the Battle of Alberta here, too, which is what makes this Stanley Cup final here even juicier. Like, there are two big elements that left the Battle of Alberta. Sam Bennett, and think about all those wars he had with Evander Kane, and ditto for Matthew Tkachuk, and all the wars he had with everybody on the Edmonton Oilers. Like, that adds a whole nother level of spice here. Like, I will be fascinated to see if they can keep it, if Florida can still play physical, walk to the line and not cross it. Which I always point out, Brian Burke would always tell me, watch the first penalty of the game, because good officials will tell you that's the one that sets the line. It's like, okay, guys, that's the standard. That's the line. Don't cross it. We'll let you play to this level, but that's it. That's what makes the first call so fascinating. And I just wonder if Florida can approach that line and not cross it over, because you're right. I mean, ask the Dallas Stars. I mean, you guys know, like, only 10 shots for Edmonton yesterday, 2 power play goals, and the game's over. Mm-hmm.
I wonder for you, Jeff, when you're looking at this one, like this is a historical distance. These two teams that are coming from, obviously Sunrise and Edmonton. I believe it's the largest difference of any championship series in North American professional sports in terms of latitude. So, I mean, there's going to be a lot of travel. I'm sure some of our colleagues will be doing some of it. Do you think that factors at all into this, like the length of this entire series, almost touching 4 weeks if it goes to seven, how the teams can prepare for that?
I know you're going to hear a lot of complaining from media. Oh,
I've already seen it.
I had to fly into Denver. Oh, I had to loop into Atlanta. Oh, I had to, a 4-hour stopover in Toronto. Could not get direct flights. I mean, it's the same factor on both sides. And like these guys, like, listen, put it this way. Connor McDavid's not flying where we're flying, Ailish. You know what I mean? Like it's still as comfortable as possible. You know, one of the things that I wanted to get out on your program here today is when you mentioned, you know, historically here, you know, the longest distance between the two. You know, these are two teams. Like Stanley Cup Final always gives you a chance to pause and reflect on the two teams and how they got there. You know, one is a byproduct of Southern expansion, mm-hmm. which is a byproduct specifically of Wayne Gretzky going to Los Angeles. And, you know, Wayne Huizenga, who was a former owner, the first owner of the Florida Panthers, came in at the same time as the Anaheim Ducks, and that was owned by Disney. And the idea was Disney was going to make the movies, and Wayne Huizenga, who owned Blockbuster, they were going to distribute them, and hockey was going to take a whole new jump in the stratosphere. But all that was because of Wayne Gretzky and that trade. And the Southern extension all traces back to Wayne Gretzky. And the Oilers themselves were part of, you can't call it WHA expansion, but WHA absorption into the NHL. And the key team there were the Edmonton Oilers. And the key player there was Wayne Gretzky. Again, to me, this whole series comes back to maybe the greatest player of all time, Wayne Gretzky. That's why Edmonton is there. That's who the WHA, and that's why the Florida Panthers are there through Southern expansion because of the Gretzky trade. How about that?
I'm glad you got it in.
Baby.
We didn't have that in the notes, but we got there.
Geek for you.
There you go. Okay, so we were geeking about you know, Connor McDavid earlier, the legacy moment that this is, and maybe his legacy requires the Oilers to win this series. But what else hinges on McDavid? Because it felt like McDavid put the Oilers on his back in the Western Conference Final, maybe smelling blood in the water in some respects, but he really has emerged here as clearly, you know, Edmonton's most best player, obviously, but most important player. There are people talking about Draisaitl and Bouchard a little bit before the Western Conference final statement from McDavid. But this is bigger than just McDavid. I mean, this is going to be in households across the USA with more distribution, of course, with ESPN and TNT. And you can sell a superstar in the States. Maybe it's not required as much up here. Like, how much does this series from McDavid, from the Oilers, maybe the Oilers winning, how much does it mean for just the game?
I think it's huge. Anytime you can get your number one superstar on the main stage in the United States, of course, that's enormous. I've always found it really interesting, and we'll see it again here with Connor McDavid. And, you know, you talk about, you know, his legacy and, you know, his signature and what this means for him. First of all, to your point, I think it's enormous stateside to have Connor McDavid in the Stanley Cup final. But I've always found it interesting the way that willing your team to success, like your team to success, does a lot for you as an individual. You know, when it comes time to voting for the Hall of Fame or having Hall of Fame conversations, what do we always talk about? How many cups has he won? Mm-hmm. As if it's an individual award. You know, what has he done for his team? It's like this one is the ultimate. Like, I personally think that if you win the Hart Trophy, that should get you automatically into the Hockey Hall of Fame. I might be in the minority on that one. I know there are certain exceptions, but as a general rule of thumb, I believe that. But I do find it interesting the way that, you know, your individual qualifications for something like the Hall of Fame or your individual qualifications for greatness are predicated on you doing something for and something with your team. And I think this is a moment where Connor McDavid with the Edmonton Oilers can take that next step. There's that individual greatness. He can have all the Art Ross trophies in the world and all the Hart trophies, et cetera, Rocket Richard. But until you're able to do something with your team, you're not going to be at that level. Like, think about all the greats that we all talk about. What do they all have in common?
Yep.
Stanley Cups. And again, you never want to go down and ask, you know, Joe Thornton how this feels, or Jerome Iginla how this feels, or Marcel Dion and Gilbert Perreault how this feels. You never want to be in that club, which is the greatest player to not win the Stanley Cup. Henrik Lundqvist, there's another one. Mm-hmm. You never want to be part of that club.
All right, Merrick, we appreciate your time. I know you got to run. It sounds like you're at a T-ball game. I'm just making
No, you know where I am? I've never been here before. Ailish, maybe you have been. Justin, I'm not sure if you're a baseball person. Like to go and watch ball games. But I'm at Whipper Watson Park in Newmarket.
Mm. Love have good old Newmarket.
Have you guys Watson? Been here?
No, but it sounds electric in the background.
It's awesome. Yeah, my 14-year-old's playing. They just said they're playing Newmarket right now. Stouffville up 2-0 over Newmarket.
That's all we need, yes.
And no, but this is a gorgeous, it's a little hidden treasure. Okay. It's off the beaten path. It is a beautiful diamond. And listen, it's named after Whipper Billy Watson, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time that Canada's ever produced. So I'm kind of in heaven here.
There you go.
I'm loving this.
Well, all our listeners now know exactly where you're standing, so beware. They're coming.
Yeah, that they know where to stay away from.
Yeah.
Oh, there's that chimp.
Oh, that's funny.
Might get a couple
guy.
Live reviews of the
you
podcast.
Might. You might. Well, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate your time tonight.
People can come and yell at me about dumb things that I say on my show. Shouldn't say where I am. Okay, we'll talk in 7 days. You
Bye, Jeff. Bye. Jeff Merrick of the Jeff Merrick Show at 32 Thoughts, the podcast, and baseball dad.
He's a busy guy.
You know who we're talking about at Hall of Famers? Well, like, here's one that's doing something pretty spectacular that has never been done before. Corey Perry,
mm-hmm.
everyone's favorite fourth liner, is now the first NHLer.
Suddenly a second liner.
Well, yeah, he's flexible. The first NHLer to go to 5 cup finals with 5 different teams. He's getting that opportunity now with the Edmonton Oilers. It's pretty incredible. And like 4 out of those 5 were in the last 6 years. It's
yeah,
wild.
We're looking at his career today. It's like 14 years with the Ducks. Great years. And then just exclusively Stanley Cup finals
yeah.
pretty much after that.
See if he wins one.
And yeah, he's still looking
he's got
for,
one, but
for that second one with the new
one.
Team.
Yeah.
Looking for another victory of the Toronto Blue Jays. Big one tonight, of course, mm-hmm. starting a 4-game set with the Baltimore Orioles, Grayson Rodriguez, Kevin Gausman. It's been a good little run for the Blue Jays. They've got as many losses in the last 7 days as they have successfully thrown parties and jersey launches. So it's good. 5 good. Wins,
nice.
1 loss, last 6 days. But
against
yeah.
the White Sox and the Pirates,
that's,
but you just have to say that, because people get mad
caveat.
If you don't say it.
It's the important
yes, that's who they were playing, though.
So, yeah, this is a good, a big stretch here for the Jays. You know, it's a tough pitching matchup off the mm-hmm. bat, Rodriguez to Corbin Burns. But, yeah, we've seen them reach into their bag a little bit more and come up with some strategy. Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Now, I liked the urgency
playing some
of
third
that.
Base over the weekend. I was wrong. I said earlier that the home run jacket and George Springer moving from leadoff were the last-ditch efforts to get things going.
That was.
But the positional change for Vladimir Guerrero Jr., albeit a very temporary one, was another one. Mm-hmm. And to me, I was so happy when I saw it. Because if you're not trying to optimize, what are you really doing at this point? Mm-hmm. And this is a team that can't afford to leave potentially or incremental improvement from their roster, from their offense, off the table.
Yeah.
And I understand that this can't be, you know, the catch-all, the fix to everything, but I really like that they did it, that it's an option, that it's something they can look to moving forward as they try to inject more offense into this group. Clearly, they're not, like, fully there. Maybe some fortunate bounces over the course of a pretty mm-hmm. light schedule. But they did hold serve to an extent to at least make this run here against Baltimore more interesting than it could have been.
Yeah, it showed a little urgency, you know, moving Vlad over to third base. It's just that one game, but Vogelbach gets in at DH. He has that big two-run double. They win the game. He's still in the lineup tonight at DH and in the cleanup spot. So big opportunities for Vogelbach, savior of the Blue Jays. But Gausman hasn't been traditionally too great against the Orioles.
Mm-hmm.
Some of their big guys, who obviously are good against really anyone, have cooked a little bit on Gausman. But we'll get into some best bets later in the show. But the Blue Jays are up at 7 o'clock against Baltimore, and that's the start of 4 games at home. I believe it's the second time they're wearing their new jerseys, which we now own.
We
One
do
of
own.
The
we
night
have every Blue
jerseys.
Jays jersey. We could do a little better with the NHL jersey.
It looks good, but it's dark, so hopefully it shows up on TV. But, yeah, we own one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Justin has a Kikuchi one, and I have a Berríos one.
You got a Berríos one.
Those are our guys.
You got outfitted pretty well.
Yeah, we got to get those fitted last week at the launch party, and I will say they are really, really nice. And we both got a hat. They're nice.
There you go.
Yeah.
Everyone knows what we got.
We're styling. Go Berríos. Go Kikuchi. Okay. We'll take a quick break. Rob Brown will join us, Oilers analyst, former NHLer, help us talk about the Oilers aspect of this. How crazy was Edmonton last night? And a couple kickers, including Canadian Open. We'll talk a little Caitlin Clark. And then Mitch Marner in 32 Thoughts. That's a juicy podcast tidbit. We'll be right back on the Fan Pregame.
breaking down the top stories in hockey and Elliot Friedman every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590. The Fan, a little later, you can catch the Blue Jays and the Baltimore Orioles starting at 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590. The Fan is Sportsnet 1. You got to wait quite a few nights before you see any NHL action, but that gives us lots of time to tee up the stakes at hand with the Oilers and the Panthers going for the best trophy in sports, right? You don't have to ask me twice.
Of course.
But, I just want to give you the opportunity to disagree so I can mute you.
Be too many nights between La Bombas.
Yeah.
You know?
La Bamba, baby.
It'd take a while for that barn to be rocking again.
Yeah, that was an electric atmosphere last night. We're bringing in Rob Brown, Oilers analyst for Chet and NHLer. Rob, how's it going? Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
How was that place last night? Because, you know, we're watching, we're listening, and it seemed to be absolutely, like, deafening.
It was. It's funny. We do the games from the press box, which is about eight stories up at Rogers Arena. And normally, in a regular season game, you could hear a dull roar. Last night, we couldn't even hear each other talking. So it was pretty cool. And then it just carried on. We do our post game, and there's a bar called Studio 99. And we come out of the stairwell, and it's about a, 300-meter walk to the bar. And as soon as you open the stairwell doors, you just heard this rumble. And the fans kept breaking into We Want the Cup or Let's Go Oilers. It was a party atmosphere walking into the arena, and then it just went next level once the Oilers won.
How much work is going to get done in the Edmonton area over the next month? I mean, this Stanley Cup final touches parts of 4 weeks. It's mostly 3 weeks long, but touches parts of 4 weeks. I feel like productivity is going to hit a career low.
It'll be a career low, but booze sales will be a career high. So I know my buddies are all stocked up. They've been waiting for this. So this is just, if you're from Edmonton or if you've been to Edmonton, the mood of the city is always based on how the Oilers did the night before, and that's regular season. So imagine what it's like in the playoffs for now. When the Oilers win a game, for the next 48 hours till they play again, the city is just electric. Everyone's in a good mood. They're high-fiving. People are hugging on the streets. It is a very happy place to be in Edmonton right now.
How about the rest of the country? Like, you're getting the pulse, obviously, of those in Edmonton, and maybe not Calgary. Maybe we can leave them out of it, but do you think that you felt like there's more bandwagon, like welcome bandwagoners on that just want to see a Canadian team finally lift this thing?
I hope so. I do know that as a fan, I work for the Oilers, but I'm a fan. And when the Oilers are out, I'm looking for another team to cheer for. And it's always a Canadian team that I'm looking for. I know that we do a call-in show afterwards. The Oilers have fans from, we get calls from Australia, New Zealand, Germany, throughout Europe, a number of calls from the States. I think when you have the players that the Oilers have and guys like Connor McDavid on your team, there's an excitement level for anybody that likes hockey. So it doesn't matter where you're from. He just draws fans to him. So there's a lot of people, I believe, cheering for the Oilers. I hope they are across Canada. The Oilers have a number of Canadian players on their team. So this would be Canada's team, I believe. If you're looking for a team to cheer for the next, the playoffs seem to be about 3 weeks long. So this final, so jump on the Oilers bandwagon. We have lots of room for you.
Okay, so let's talk about Connor McDavid a little bit because, through two rounds, maybe through one round and parts of two, people were like, wow, the best player on the ice is Leon Draisaitl, and Evan Bouchard has been the most indispensable player. But in round three, it certainly seemed like Connor McDavid took this team on his back and maybe is smelling blood in the water just a little bit, knows he's close, and knows that he can make a difference for this team. Tell us about how the starting point here for McDavid and where he's at right now for this Oilers team.
Well, I think he understands the importance he has to this team, and we certainly do as fans here in Edmonton. Leon Draisaitl is all world, and we've seen in the last number of years in the playoffs, he takes his game to a different level. And there's nights that he is the best player in the world, but when it comes down to big moments, Connor McDavid just seems to grasp those. And it's funny, last night the Oilers scored two goals. Dallas made really two mistakes in the entire game. One was taking a penalty, and one when they were on the penalty kill when Zach Hyman scored. The goal that Connor McDavid scored, there was nothing the Dallas Stars could do. There was no mistake made. That was simply the greatest player in the world deciding he was going to score a goal. I mean, he beat Heiskanen, who is one of the best defensemen in the world, and he turned him inside out. So I do believe when Connor and Leon at the beginning of the season said, this is cup or bust. Now, they might not have wanted to say that. It put a whole big bullseye on them and a lot more pressure, but that's their belief. And I think right now, Connor McDavid sees, I'm four wins away. Mm-hmm. 4 wins away from an ultimate goal. He's got all of these accolades, all of these championships, these records, but he wants to be known as a Stanley Cup champion. And you can see it in his demeanor. You can see it in his eyes. And I would not bet against Connor McDavid in the next round against the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, when you say cup or bust now, it seems like, okay, well, you're in the Stanley Cup final. But there was a chance, there was a moment in this season where they were the second or worst team in the NHL. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, like, this is a season like none other. You're going from the bottom of the league standings. You fire your coach in November. You're on that 2-9-1 start. And how important was it for the team to find something, some unity, something to rally behind for that incredible stretch that they went on to now be, you know, in the actual Stanley Cup final where they can be a cup or bust, but covering this one from start to finish must have been a pretty unique storyline.
It was. There was a game where the Oilers played the San Jose Sharks, who were the worst team in the league, and San Jose beat them. And we're like, okay, the Oilers just lost to the worst team. Does that mean we're the worst team now? It was a roller coaster. I think there was so much pressure at the beginning of the year. Things didn't go right for the Oilers, and it just kind of snowballed to the point where I think you look on the faces, close-ups on the bench, I think they were dumbfounded. They're like, how did we get here? They went out and made a change with the coach, and it was a calming influence. And I think the team now takes on the coach's personality. They seem calm in all situations. Nothing seems to rattle them. And the team just started playing better. And I do like what Ken Holland did was really nothing. He's like, you know, everyone's saying we got to trade some core players. We've got to go get a new goaltender. We're not good enough depth-wise. And he believed in his team. And I think the team took that as an endorsement, saying, you know what? Our GM believes in us. We got a new coach. He's given us confidence. He's given us direction. And now let's just go do what we're supposed to be doing. And the team just got better and better. And they've learned along the way through the mistakes of the past that, okay, what we tried to outscore our mistakes before. It doesn't work. We have to learn how to play good defensive hockey. And they have. Players that have been maligned, Stuart Skinner, there was a number of people. Stuart Skinner, you can never win with Skinner in net. Mm-hmm. The Oilers would be in Dallas tomorrow night if it wasn't mm-hmm. for Stuart Skinner. Darnell Nurse took a ton of heat. The last 3-4 games, he's been excellent. This team has just rallied together, and there has been a belief, even when they were the bottom of the standings, there was a belief in that dressing room that they were good enough, and now they've got 7 games to prove they are.
Yeah, you said it snowballed at the start of the season, and there's been moments where the snowball could get snowballing here in these playoffs with Stuart Skinner, with Darnell Nurse, and it feels like they've used it to their advantage. I feel like the Nurse thing was a rallying point. I feel like the Pickard move rescued Skinner, and now he's the guy who can win a game 6 like he did last night. That is a pretty stark turnaround, and I guess it leads me back to Chris Knobloch. Like, I don't want to tap dance on the grave of Jay Woodcroft, but I mean, they were the second best team, I think, in the playoffs last year, but just lost in the second round to the Stanley Cup champions. Mm-hmm. Like, is possible with Jay Woodcroft? Impossible without Chris Knobloch? Like, what did he unlock to give them belief? And is there more of a strategic element, more of a tactical thing that we should be paying attention to?
Well, I do believe Jay Woodcroft's a very good coach, and I think he will be back coaching the National Hockey League. I just think the personality of Chris Knobloch is what this team needed. It was a team that it had emotional highs and lows. And you could see it in their game the last number of years. But this year they've got a coach that's very calm. And when you're a player and you turn around and the coach seems, oh, he seems all right. It's like I always say when you're on an airplane and you hit turbulence, I always look at the stewardess. Okay, is the stewardess, okay, she looks calm. Okay, we're going to be all right. So if you're a player and you look back and you got the coach, oh, he doesn't seem to be too fazed by the fact the other team scored 2 goals. Why should I be worried about it? So I think he's just the right person at the right time. As far as tactical, the one thing that has really jumped to the forefront for this Oilers team has been their penalty killing. And it, to me, is the biggest reason that they're in the finals, is their penalty killing has been so good. Completely shut down the Canucks. The Dallas Stars never scored a power play goal against them. And these are a lot of one goal games. So one power play goal could have been the difference between the Oilers moving on or not. So I know that Chris Knobloch says he's passed that off to his assistant coaches. But I think Knobloch understood that this team had to get better defensively, understood that this team had to be a better penalty-killing team, and they've become that. And the one thing, the biggest thing, and I don't know if there's a reason why, but every time that Chris Knobloch makes a gutsy move, it's worked out. Mm-hmm. Putting in your backup goaltender, pulling out a couple veteran players. The one game, and we're all sitting there shocked, he put on a line, he put Corey Perry and Ryan McLeod back in the lineup. They've both been in the press box. They had 0 points in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And then he puts them on a line with Leon Draisaitl, who's the second best player in the world. And we're like, hey, seriously, you just gave the second best player two guys with 0 points. And they were the best line that night. So everything Chris Knobloch has done has turned out. And this is a guy with no experience at the National Hockey League level. So all the credit in the world for what he's done with his team.
So that's his instincts, but that's also the response he's getting for his team. Like, they're put in positions and those players are stepping up because I guess they believe as well in their coach and what the plan is. In both the previous two rounds, there's been an adjustment for the Oilers. First, it was net. And second, it was what you just mentioned with Perry and McLeod coming in and kind of changing the middle six. Can Edmonton afford an adjustment versus the Florida Panthers, who have been probably the best team in the playoffs, at least if you look at the underlying numbers? Maybe not the highest scoring, maybe not the best defensively, but overall, it's hard to really poke holes in this team. Can the Oilers afford to have another speed bump?
Well, it's a good point, because we were talking about it with our buddies last night, is the Oilers, after games two or three, they made some adjustments. Well, after two or three, if you're adjusting against Florida, you might be down two or three games to nothing. So I think the adjustments were going to have to come earlier. I think they've got a week to prepare. They can see who the lines are, what they need to do to match up against the Florida Panthers. So any adjustments are going to have to be quicker. I do believe Florida is a fantastic hockey club. I think that this will be the best series of all the series that we've had so far in the playoffs. They've got great depth. They got superstars. The one thing that the Florida Panthers will have to be careful of is they cannot play a physical brand of hockey that puts them in the penalty box. Mm-hmm. Because what we've seen thus far in the playoffs, you can't stop the Oilers' power play. It is too good. The only way you can stop them is by not taking penalties. But I do believe that Florida is good. To me, this is the two best teams in the National Hockey League going head-to-head. And the only sad part right now is the fact that it's 6 days before the series starts, and the series seems to be that it's going to be 38 days long. So that part sucks, but everything else is leading up to a fantastic final.
Plenty of time to add to the inventory at local bars and restaurants.
Yes.
last one, you mentioned the power play there, 19 goals in 18 games so far, which is mightily impressive. You broke into the league in 1987. You've seen some good power plays both on the ice and from press boxes. Excuse me. Is this the best power play you've ever seen?
It is. I think Connor McDavid is the best power play player in the history of the National Hockey League. You're giving him time and space with his speed, the way he moves around in the offensive zone. He's one of those guys. For example, the first goal, Dallas played everything proper. They did everything they were supposed to do, and Connor McDavid still scored a goal. So this is the best power play that I've seen. They're dangerous. All five guys are skilled. They all can shoot. They can all score, but their tenacity of getting the puck back when it's lost, the puck retrieval is the best I've ever seen. So, yes, this power play is fantastic. And I played with some pretty good players. I played with Mario and Coffey. But this power play that we're watching here in Edmonton is a historic power play, and it is their most dangerous weapon. And that's something that if the Oilers do win the Stanley Cup, it'll be on the back of specialty teams.
Well, Rob, this was awesome to get a chance to chat with you. Congrats on having some fun and maybe a couple days off here before it all gets spicy once again. We appreciate it. Maybe we'll get a chance to talk if the Edmonton Oilers do, in fact, win a cup, because I think this Canadian country would be pretty happy with that.
Well, it was nice to chat with you guys.
Thanks so much, Rob. We'll talk soon. Rob Brown, Oilers analyst for CHED and an NHLer, 1987 to 2003. I think the point here about the specialty teams is really going to be something. If you're Paul Maurice, who is looking like Paul Maurice is, he's been in his bag. We know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That Florida Panthers team is definitely, I think, more spicy, physical, antagonistic than the Edmonton Oilers. But the Oilers have that upper hand of, oh, you give us a power play, we suck you into it, and we can score. So is that where maybe Corey Perry finds his magic this series, where he gets in there, he instigates, he becomes a guy that, you know, the other team is aware of, somehow lures in some power plays for the Oilers to get them an opportunity.
Yeah, Evander Kane too.
Yep, definitely.
It is interesting, right? Because Paul Maurice, no dummy. The Florida Panthers, no dummies. They're going to understand that they've got to keep things within reason if they're going to stand a chance, because you can't send the Edmonton Oilers to multiple power plays and expect to survive, especially despite, you know, they're not scoring too many goals per game. That may be because they face what? Vasilevsky, Swayman, and Shesterkin over the course of three rounds, which is pretty, pretty impressive to overcome. But yeah, I'm looking at it now. 5 minutes on average per game the Panthers have spent in the penalty box. The Oilers are averaging one goal per game on the power play. Florida's only given up six goals on the power play themselves through their run here in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So it is a strength of theirs. However, as Rob Brown mentions, this Oilers team, this Oilers power play is not like any other. I really think that's the key to the series. And yeah, Evander Kane and Corey Perry can try to suck them in, but the Florida Panthers are really, really good at this game where they suck you into trouble as well. They pull that out of you and maybe get themselves in trouble, or they can put you in problematic spots. So yeah, that's going to be a key battle in the war, and whoever wins that battle might end up winning the war in the end.
All right, we got quite a few more days this week to tee up the Oilers-Panthers series. We're going to have lots of great guests on, of course, across our station. So we'll get you set for Saturday night, Game 1. And as we mentioned a little earlier, it's a historic one in terms of travel. Edmonton, 53.54 degrees north. Sunrise, Florida, 26.16 degrees north.
I'm not good at latitude, longitude, Dartmouth. You're going to have to explain
that's
that one.
Far. The 2024 Stanley Cup competitors have the largest difference in latitude of any championship series in the history of North American professional sports. It's 4,089 kilometers, the longest distance between Stanley Cup finalists in NHL history. I get that. I think it's important to have some extra travel days. I know it's going to suck when we're waiting 3 days for a game, but I know you're getting charter flights, et cetera. I think it's just going to make the caliber of play even better, though. You get one extra day to be fired up. You get one extra day to be get your legs in those little vacuum sealed things. Like the guys are going to be buzzing every single night regardless, but just one extra day of rest might make this even better to watch.
Yeah. I mean, I hope it means something. And again, it won't have any effect though. If they're already beaten up to the point as you know, the Florida Panthers were last year.
Yeah, with broken sternums.
They could barely eat. They were limping into those games and it was a non-competitive Stanley Cup final. And I don't think an extra day would have helped Matthew Tkachuk get out of bed with the broken sternum.
True.
So hopefully they're not at the point where they need multiple days and multiple weeks to get right. But if these two teams are at their peak health or can be as close to it, I think it does set itself up for the best possible Stanley Cup final, because last year, again, no saving it, no rescuing that. But it is pretty disappointing when one team just can't muster the energy to deal with the other.
I feel like both teams seem, knock on wood, pretty healthy right now.
Yeah, I mean, McDavid looked banged up early and now
looking
looks
now.
Like he's at his
he's
at
walking
his
all the Dallas Stars.
These two teams, too, they do have the depth where they can just roll in whole other line. I mean,
definitely.
The Panthers have a fifth line, and they can just insert who they wish. And, you know, Oilers maybe not to the same extent, but bring in McLeod and Perry in on a second line, dropped a couple third, fourth liners out, they could do the same, right? Like Warren Fogle can jump into the series at any time, and maybe they will skip a little bit on the ice. I don't know if we're going to see Sam Gagner. Maybe we'll see him lift a Stanley Cup, though.
He needs to play one cup
to fun. get his name on?
Come on.
That ain't happening. He might have to just settle for
guy. Hoisting
it over his head.
He's my guy. Sister went to Dartmouth with me. Oh. Jess. That's, yeah.
I don't.
Great family.
I don't know. Maybe they can make exceptions,
right?
Give
him all a shift.
I don't think that's.
Give him a shift.
I don't think that's.
I want to see it.
Maybe that's just Paul Maurice's tactics. Get the full fifth line in so that they need more space on the cup.
Okay. Quickly, we teed it up. Let's Marner on 32 Thoughts. Well, not him, but Marner's thoughts on 32 Thoughts.
Your call. Let's do it.
Or Caitlin Clark.
Marner.
Okay. The latest 32 Thoughts podcast, obviously, what's going on with Mitch Marner is going to be an off-season topic. It might be more than an off-season topic. It might be a full-season topic. So here's Jeff and Elliot talking about Mitch Marner's pending contract.
One of the things that a few people have told me is not to be surprised if this plays out over next season with Marner in Toronto. The Leafs are determined to either make a good trade, or with the cap room that's created by that trade, do something big that they know they can't afford to have a swing and a miss with this one. And also the player is determined, and more importantly, the people around the player are determined to do this to make themselves look good. I think that there is some real concern about how the Toronto fans will react to Marner if he starts next year unsigned. I have to tell you, I don't think there's a certain... I know there's people who are like 100% he's getting traded. On Sunday, June the 2nd, I don't know that I'm so certain of that. And I think one of the biggest challenges here are going to be the sort of like the feelings of everybody involved. I just think that this is going to take a lot of diplomacy for a lot of people to do properly.
So we already knew this was going to be a tricky one, if it's anything to be done in general, obviously with the no trade, no move, like he has to approve of all this, Marner being him. But playing it all into next season and how the fans would react and how the cap space that couldn't be used would affect this team, like it could get really messy.
I think this is a huge problem for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
I think this is a massive, massive deal that you cannot snap your fingers and fix. I don't think he's going to be amenable to just taking any destination.
No.
And if he chooses maybe one, and how much that pigeonholes you in terms of a return. And then Elliot Friedman did go on, and Jeff Merrick did go on to talk about how, you know, there is concern about what the return would be and the optics around a return. So where does that leave them? It might just leave them running it back, and then you're worried about fan response, and I think you should worry about fan response. Like, I think this, the notion that you could snap your fingers and this could be a problem that goes away, I think was pretty naive. I think this is going to be an interesting one.
Hey, you know what? When William Nylander was in a contract year, he played lights out. Maybe that's all we can hope for is as Mitch Marner goes into next year with a "I'm going to prove it to you" attitude. Leafs ride that to a cup.
Yeah, and if the biggest concern was fan reaction and he's tearing it up on the ice, well, I think that fan reaction would settle down a little bit.
That would certainly help. Okay, we have a minute or two for the Caitlin Clark topic. I know it's bigger than 2 minutes, but lots of dialogue going on today, this weekend, with WNBA and Caitlin Clark. Basically, she's getting bodied every game out there.
Bullied, even.
Bullied, bodied, chirped. You know, people saying, opposing teammates saying, oh, what's she even bring to the table other than threes, and refusing to answer questions about her, not coming to the podium, getting fined, et cetera. It was basically, Chicago Sky playing for the first time ever, Angel Reese and co. But it's just, It's tough to watch a little bit, because I think I'm fortunate enough to play women's sports at a professional level, and I never saw more of like the, well, there's one person versus the world, but it really feels like it's Caitlin Clark and the rest of the WNBA, and there's just this tension and I think some jealousy. I would be probably blunt enough to say there's some jealousy towards Caitlin Clark.
Sure.
And this is a really important moment for women's sports, because it has arrived, and I think it's really tough to have these discussions, because you want to praise Caitlin Clark for bringing all the attention to the WNBA, and she has. They get in private jets. They're getting it more attendance than they ever have. But yeah, if you're a player that's put their time in on the WNBA, you want to say, hey, I was here and appreciate my game too. So there's definitely a big, messy situation at hand, and I think everybody is talking about it.
Yeah, it's hard not to look at the gatekeeping as somewhat unbecoming, right? But this is something that's happened in sports before, like the new hot, fresh figure, that's going to, you know, whatever's in vogue gets treated a little bit differently. And I can see why that would be a thing. But also, like, where are Caitlin Clark's teammates? Like, I like to see people fight back and stand up for her a little bit more just on the teammate side. And again, I haven't watched every game, so I'm not sure that anyone went back at Kennedy, who bodied her, as you mentioned. But, like, I'd like to see the other side of that, where, like, you know, you're standing up for your number one overall pick and your new teammate, but maybe that's still to come.
Yeah, more to come. I'm sure the story's not going away anywhere anytime soon. Every time Caitlin Clark gets another accolade, like, hey, Rookie of the Month this year, there's a lot of people that feel slighted and a lot of people that feel like they deserve that moment. But, you know, let's appreciate the greatness of Caitlin Clark and everybody else out there, too. Okay. We're going to say goodnight for this evening. Sportsnet's going to have Baltimore and Toronto up on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 1, and Sportsnet. You want to watch it? We got it. It's all across the network. A couple days until we'll have NHL action. And, of course, the NBA Finals start on Thursday as well, so we're going to tee that up this week. Good night for now. Happy Monday.